Bandwidth for February has been provided by CashFly, the fastest, most reliable CDN in the business. CashFly delivers all of our content here 5x5, and they're the best. Check them out at cashfly.com, CACHEFLY, and let them know that you heard about them here on 5x5.
I press the record button.
I'm recording.
I'm also recording.
Here we go. 3, 2, 1. We recorded this episode on February 4th, 2016. This is On the Grid, episode 152. This week, all the reasons Andy was wrong about logos last week. Here we go.
So, I know you have follow-up from last episode.
Do
we want to talk about how mad I am at Twitter right now?
Why are you so mad at Twitter?
Oh, do we want to talk about it? I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of do want to talk about it. Tell me why you're so mad at Twitter, and then we're going to do a little bit of follow-up.
Well, I mean, so a couple days ago, these dudes, design dudes, mm-hmm. Dribble bros, mm-hmm. They posted this little project of theirs where they're drawing beer cans for each of the Super Bowl competing cities, and there's like a group of them, and you can vote for which designer, you know, fake beer cans you think
I know
are
what you're
best.
Talking about. I've seen this today.
Yeah, because I sent it to you, remember?
Other people sent it to me before you did.
That is not true. I have the Slack documentation right here. I'm going to pull it up.
Yeah, I acted like you were the first one to send it to me.
Oh,
other
okay.
People did too.
Yeah, that's very likely. That sounds like a very logical thing to do.
Matt, you like design and football. You're going to love design and football.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, anyway, it's a thing. It's one of these design contests. I feel like I hadn't seen these in a couple of years as predominantly. Like, you know, I would say right around the time we were graduating, maybe like my junior and senior year of college, these were like a huge thing. Like every other week, there was a new designer project where some designer got together all their friends and they all redesigned license plates or made posters for all 50 states or drew their favorite piece of fruit using just a CMYK halftone pattern or whatever. There was like a billion of them. And I haven't seen a lot of them lately because I think, you know, rightfully so, I don't think it's fair to call the response to these things criticism. It's just like a lack of caring because who cares, right? Like I think it's seen as like a self-promotional thing and like a cool self-initiated project, but at the end of the day it's just, you know, okay, you drew some things of a theme with your friends. And so I feel like they kind of fell out of the thing that people do all the time, not because they're horrible or deserving of like harsh criticism, just because they're boring. Who cares? Anyway, new one of these things came out, which is designer beer cans, and all the participants are white dudes. There's not that many of them. I think there's like 7 or 8 of them or whatever. They live in the respective cities. They're designing beer cans to rep their own hometown, whatever, whatever. And, you know, posted on Twitter because, you know, it's not... They made a website for it, dressed it all up, posted it on Twitter, people vote for it. It's kind of a promotional thing, right? They're trying to get some eyeballs on it.
Sure.
And some people's response was to ask a question about, hey, why is it all white men? Some people's response was merely to point out it's all white men. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm not even that disappointed by the project because, again, frankly, who cares? Like, I feel like I've already spent entirely too much time thinking about fake beer cans designed for the Super Bowl. Like, it's not a thing that I would ever care about, even if it was all white men. Like, I kind of love the opinion, like, whatever. But the response, the people merely asking or merely pointing out that it's all white men has been so insane, so fragile and defensive that it just, like, confirms all of the suspicions and fears about the design industry that everyone has. And it's been so disappointing to read through all the tweets and everything. And it's just, designers, man.
Oh, see, I was not reading this, but this was my exact same reaction to when that Envision post took off on Designer News, and I wasn't really all that interested. Like, I wasn't really super worried about the Envision documentary itself. I was more worried about how upset people were to one person asking a question why there weren't more diverse participants.
Yeah,
which was that was the part that got me. Where you're like, what? He's asking a question. It's a legit question. What? I don't know. I don't understand that part of the outrage. And I don't, you know, beer cans and design stuff, that's fun. But I think you're allowed to ask. I think you're allowed to ask why it's just white dudes.
Or even just point it out. like the fact that they're so defensive about it, it just proves every point, right? Like Jennifer Daniel just said, today's 100% male project brought to you by beer cans and football or whatever, and posted a link to it. All she said was 100% male. That's it. And one of the dudes responded and was like, I understand what you're saying. There really are systematic problems, but I got to say, you're completely off on this one. It's like, what is she completely off about? Are you not 100% men? Did she mess that up? Because she didn't even say anything. The defensiveness is just insane. And it's just, ugh. I've written so many tweets and deleted them because I shouldn't get involved more than I already have.
This is why you don't read the comments.
This is an okay one not to care about, Andy, if you want to go ahead and not care.
Well, I don't care about the stupid thing. I care about their response to, like, people on Twitter. And by the way, it's mostly women. Like, they are nowhere near as hostile to the men that responded on Twitter, you may be shocked to find. But it's like, it just sucks that this is the community where, you know, merely saying a thing on Twitter means that you're going to get a bunch of people that are defending themselves, you know, weirdly discounting you and saying that what you're pointing out doesn't matter and isn't important. And there's all this like feigned civility. Like, these people want to be seen as like socially conscious and as not part of the problem. So there's all this like weird dancing around and, you know, wordplay to try and make it seem like they're actually the good guys. But it's all just like this. I hate seeing all these women have to deal with this bullshit. And then people, you know, telling them that they're wrong and filling up their replies with just garbage. Like, that's the part that I'm upset by. Go and make all the beer can things you want alone by yourself with your friends in the corner. Like, that's fine. But if someone brings it up, just say like, oh yeah, it never occurred to us that people might be upset by that. Or, oh, we hadn't thought about how this might be perceived and, you know, are bad. Not, you really screw this one up. This is totally fine. Here are the reasons why it's totally fine. You don't allow it, aren't allowed to have a feeling about it.
Is this a designer thing, a male thing?
Both. That's the thing. You nailed it, Matt.
A beautiful marriage of the two, where all of our self-consciousness just comes together and grows a beautiful flower.
It's a marriage of the thing, but it's a marriage of the thing in that this is why it's a problem that graphic design culture is male culture. This is why they're the same thing. Like, it's not like it's the two magically combining. Like, the culture of graphic design is a culture of maleness and a culture of arrogance and a culture of telling people they're wrong for reasons that you have justified for yourself in your own value set and your own brain. And so, like, that whole system is one and the same thing. And it's just, it's maddening. And I feel like sometimes this is why, I've been wondering a lot to myself lately, like, why me is, I like design, right? And I love media about culture. I love reading and thinking about art and music. And I love reading and thinking about science. I read lots of scientific things that are not cultural things. They're about, you know, progress and technology and, you know, all sorts of different industries. And design, the reason I love it is it's like the marriage of those two things, right? So if I really love media about culture and I really love media about science, why is it that media about design is such fucking garbage all the time? Like, there's not one good blog, there's not one good podcast, not even this one sometimes. There's not one good place where, like, conversations are not fraught with this, like, weird shittiness. And it's, I honestly feel like a huge reason for that is that there's so much white maleness in design that we can't conceivably get away from it. It's impossible. And so, like, it's so entrenched in what we do that it pops up everywhere in these subtle ways where, like, everything's just a little bit shitty and no one knows why. It's because of all this kind of homogeneity amongst this sort of culture.
Do you think of it as white, the white maleness, if we're going to call it that, leads to thinking you're right about everything all the time?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very distinct trait of white males.
You know the character
males.
I play on this show? White guy is right about everything all the time?
I mean, I am not so arrogant to think that I'm immune from this, right? Like, part of the reason I feel like I recognize it so viscerally is that it is me and was me to a much greater degree when I was younger.
We've talked about this. The things that make you cringe the most are just younger versions of yourself.
Always.
Seeing that in the world is the most terrible thing in the whole world.
Younger versions, if you're being generous to yourself, right? Like, if you're being
the Andy in your heart, if you ever have to see that, that's terrifying.
No, but like, I have the same like gut reaction that I see people posting on Twitter to somebody saying something that is perceived as critical about my work, or saying something that isn't actually critical, but you know is going to be received critically, or you know that can be painted in a critical light. Like, I have that same gut reaction. And there was a time in my life where I was the first one to fly off the handle and type all the tweets and respond, and justify, defend. And if anything, I hope I've just gotten a little better about taking a step back, maybe considering that it's not entirely about me. And the reason this person is posting something is not just to get under my skin and make me feel bad about myself. It's maybe just they're observing something in the world and they have their own thoughts and feelings. I feel it so strongly because, yes, like, I'm subject to the exact same things. And God knows I believe in myself. I have no self-esteem problem. So, I'm not free of these problems, but I feel like I'm at least trying to be aware of them. And it makes me so crazy because it's just like, This is why we can't have nice things, designers. This is why we can't have nice things, because this is our response to them.
Now I'm trying to think of what is the thing that ties all the garbage design media, which, again, there's not that much good stuff. So what ties all that stuff together? And I think it's almost like one step past the feeling of being right all the time. It's the step past where, like, we've already assumed that everything we've ever done is great. And so anything we do now should just be celebrated. Like, hey, look, we made a logo for somebody. Nobody's going to question why it had to be made or what it is or what's the purpose of it. Just, we've already accepted that this logo culture is already great. And therefore, we're just going to post about it and talk about how great it is.
I mean, try and tell me that branding is not a giant dick-swinging competition.
Yeah, in a lot of ways
That's all it is, right? Like, look how glorious and amazing my thing can look, and look how ambitious I am with it. Like, it's just a big fucking...
Uber isn't about cars. It's about atoms and bits. It's everything that holds the whole world together. It's everything that exists.
This company I'm building is the most important company that does everything.
It's literally... the composition of everything in your world.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a limb here and say that's a pretty male mode of thought.
My own personal solution to that I try to tell myself all the time, Matt, you could be wrong about it. And if you figure out you're wrong about it, just do it different next time, which was not always my approach to life. Hence the character I play that's right all the time, mm-hmm. is really just my childhood self that could not stand losing or being wrong about anything. And I've tried to slowly figure out that being wrong is actually pretty okay as long as you learn from it and you try to do better the next time. And actually, it'll help you do better the next time.
Yeah. I mean, whenever I see...
That's what learning means.
Whenever I see shit like this happen, I basically just make it a moment where I think, okay, try so hard, Andy, never to be this. Like, observe what this is. Look at it. Stare it in the face. Try and learn from it and just don't be this. And try and understand why this is bad. Like, truly understand why it sucks. And then, you know, try and learn from that. Because, again, it's just so, so hard. The response is just so upsetting. And, you know, I want to jump in there and explain to these people why what they're doing is not helping and it's making things way worse. But that's not going to work. They have already adopted this defensive stance. Me, a stranger, coming in and explaining further why they're screwing up, not going to be received warmly.
Yeah.
So instead, I just type the tweets, I delete the tweets, type the tweets, delete the tweets, and then I just talk generally about how masculinity is fragile.
There are times when you can just sit back and watch the horror and just, well, the other day, DC AIGA posted that Milton Glaser poster.
Yeah, that was a perfect example of, like...
All you have to do is just oh, I know what's going to happen. Here we go. I'm just going to... Oh, AIGA asked a white guy to design an offensive poster. Okay, here we go for Black History Month. This makes a lot of AIGA sense. Gonna just lean back in my chair and...
Yeah, and that one, like...
Watch the gifts flow in.
Like, their response to it, from what I saw, was much better, right? It was like, oh, we screwed up, which is the way to respond to something like that. So yeah, like that, I was not angry about that at all, right? Like, I thought it was super tone deaf and pretty stupid, but and really indicative, again, of some of the cultural things I'm talking about that seemed like the right thing to tweet out. But that's not going to make me angry in the same way that this thing makes me angry. I don't know what exactly the difference is. I just felt like that was, I guess it's the response, right? It's how people respond to the idea that maybe they didn't do a perfect job.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my point is that, like, stuff like that happens. And I mean, there's the rare moment where I could still get angry about this sort of thing, but I usually just remind myself that typically in that situation, there's very little I can do, because like me trying to change somebody's perspective or change their mind on their viewpoint or something like that, if they're being very defensive, like it's usually futile, because they're just going to keep building a defense the more and more somebody either attacks or questions whatever their stance is. And at that point, I'm just like, is there any value in me even trying, or like, do I just ignore it and go back to trying to like be the best person that I can be and just try to be a better example?
And maybe everybody's Twitter account should have a link to their mom's phone or something. So you just just call and be like, hey, Mrs. Smith. Yeah, it's your son, Jason, again. He's doing that thing.
Yeah, he insists he's a feminist, but he's saying some pretty hateful things.
maybe you could talk to your son for a second. He won't listen to me, but I feel like we're on the same page here. You maybe have a chat with Jason.
The other thing that really strikes a chord with me is the frantically trying to talk your way out of something, right? Like, I have to assume that the people that made these beer cans and that were subject to this public criticism or whatever you want to call it, after seeing the first, maybe the first tweet, they were like, oh, this person's just being whatever. After more of them started, you know, kind of trickling in, I have to think maybe they suspected that they might have actually screwed up. But instead of, you know, somewhat copping to it or trying to understand exactly why, it's this like song and dance of trying to say the right things and take the right, you know, respectability posture and just talk about, you know, it just like get out of it, right? And what it ends up being is the defensiveness and the fragility is like quantified in the number of replies to tweets. So it's like woman posts one thing, men respond with 19 tweets. Woman posts single response to 19 tweets. Men respond with 11 more tweets. Woman posts third response that basically says, please stop tweeting at me. Please stop letting me be involved in this. Followed by more responses. It's just, it's so clear that they're like grasping for any reason how they could maybe not have been a little bit in the wrong. Any justification for it. Well, I have a wife and a daughter, so I can't possibly be feminist. Or be misogynistic. I'm all riled up. I need to drink some jasmine tea. Now I want to get to your logo flop. I understand you put a form on the internet and some people submitted things they disagree with me about.
Yeah, they did.
Which I am going to try and live, practice what I preach, and not get frustrated and defensive about. So we'll see how that goes later in the show.
So last week, you introduced the idea of interfaces are the new logos. We don't need logos anymore. Nobody needs them anymore. And I feel like we launched into it. And I was way too weak on just letting you say the things you were saying. Especially because I don't know if we couched it in enough context where I was listening back and everything we were talking about, in my mind at the time, we were talking about purely like startup companies building product that have almost no money. And so I was thinking, well, in a perfect world, it makes sense. It makes sense for just a little bit and you should plan ahead maybe if you possibly could. But yeah, I get it. Now, I don't think... I think it's a very, very specific context where somebody doesn't need a logo. I'm not buying that the whole world doesn't need one, Andy. Not flying with me.
See, this is what I wanted you to say. You may recall, as you edited the episode, I said, gee, Matt, I sure hoped you would take a stronger stance against this, but you were kind of
just like...
The
problem is you started with the idea of a very small company trying to build a product, or I assume that about you, because that's kind of the work we're probably doing. And but let's talk about it in the broader sense. Let's do that right now.
Sure.
Because I can very, if somebody says I have $30,000 and what we need to do is build this entire product in order for us to get more funding. And I'm not going to take a huge chunk of that money and build a logo. So that's where I'm coming from on the, I don't think it's important in that situation, right?
Sure.
Now the rest of the world, I don't agree with you at all. I don't think that's value. Like, I think there's plenty of reasons to still have one. I think the evolution of it over time is still happening. And I defended it later in the show a little bit better, but I was disturbed by myself and how weak I was, Andy. So
I'm glad to hear you say this, Matt, because I really suspected that you would be of a very different position than you seem to be in the episode.
I think
and it kind of derailed me a little bit because I was like, well, geez, yeah. I was hoping to argue about this, but Matt just said he kind of agrees. So
I can't remember the context, but I must have been coming out of a meeting where I was working with a very similar client to what you were talking about, and I was feeling a lot of sympathy.
Okay, so let's maybe start here then, Matt.
Yeah.
When does that client stop becoming the client that you know, is scrapped for resources, is trying to make the most of every single dollar, and you know, has a limited budget? When does that stop? Where's that line?
I think when you, if you were to kind of, if they give you what they want to build and you come back with your proposal for it and it's within their budget and they're not like shocked by it and they feel very comfortable about it, and they also ask you about the logo project too, and you give them that and they feel like they can get it all done, completely acceptable.
Well, sure, that's a situation where maybe somebody believes that they should waste that money, genuinely. But that does not mean it's the right way to spend it, just because you and I are here ready to spend their money by making them a logo.
Right. And I'm not saying what you need to do is pitch them a $100,000 logo. But what I am saying is that it doesn't hurt to start, like, to take a small chunk of that budget and spend the time planning and make the mark that makes them look like a trustworthy thing. You do a good job and you plan for the future a little bit. I really think the core of logo design, visual identity design in currently is just planning ahead. I think that's the biggest part of it.
It's also the hardest part, though. Wouldn't you agree?
It is. Yeah. I mean, just because something's hard doesn't mean I don't think it should be done. I agree. That is a very hard part.
To be clear, I'm not advocating for not planning at all. I'm just advocating for not planning a little logo that you're going to stick on a business card.
I agree. People are wrong all the time, and they'll change their mind in the future, and it'll be much more expensive to change your mind in the future. But it also will be much more expensive to never have thought about it and then try to apply it to a million things in the future. That's also a hard thing to do. So try your best up front. I mean, in the same way that it's also very expensive to change your entire business plan later in the game if you got it wrong up front. So yes, agreed. It's hard to get it right up front, but that doesn't mean you don't try to do it.
Yeah, and the things I think it's important to plan are things about the, you know, structure of the business, let's say. And I think the structure of the business, when we're talking about things that largely exist digitally, relates directly to, like, you know, how a product is structured, right? What are the different roles? How does information flow through this system? And, you know, things about consistency, like your interface being consistent across all the different pages and tendrils of your product. Like, that's, I think, extremely important.
Yeah.
And I think a much better example of something I don't trust is if I arrive at a page that's supposedly Amazon, but the form looks nothing like an Amazon form has ever looked to me before. Who cares about the logo? That's a thing I'm never going to trust, right? Because it's like a totally foreign land, basically. So I'm not against any of these planning things. I'm just saying that none of this, as far as I can tell, ever synthesizes into something that Paul Rand would look at and say, like, ah, yes, a great logo, or something that, you know, graphic design students are making in their branding one classes. But this is not the stuff that matters anymore. And yes, everyone is still doing it. Yes, Matt, there are still lots of clients that are willing to pay for it because we're all still trying to catch up. It still feels like the right thing to do. It still feels like the thing that makes you established. Still feels the thing that makes you, it makes you feel confident in what you're doing and like you're competing on a respectable level. But I don't see any practical justification for it, where I very much did in the 20th century.
So I can take that two different ways. I'm going to start with one. I'll head to another one, but don't let me forget about the idea of, you know, being important to the culture that you currently exist in. But just, I think the idea of having a mark that looks well done and looks trustworthy, like, as much as we maybe don't want to call that a logo, like, we can call it a word mark or whatever, I think it does the same thing. I think doing that job is an important thing. I think doing the job of making your thing look like there was time put into it, that is a trustworthy thing, that it could be of value, is maybe just indicative of the bigger whole, right?
I'm just saying, I think the least important thing to that feeling is the logo in the top left, right? Like, how about a page that loads reliably, that's consistent, that works on all the different screens, that matches all the other screens that are part of this product? Like, I honestly, like, who cares about the logo in the top corner? Like, yes, you know, Facebook just has their name written in letters, and Twitter just has a little bird, and they are logos because we are still in a culture of logos.
Yeah.
But those things practically don't need to be logos in the logo sense, in the sense that we're still teaching students to make them. They don't need to exist at all, frankly, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think the key is just uniqueness. I mean, look, I also agree. I don't think they need to be taught in the exact same sense. I think that changes. I think a lot of things are changing right now. Here's a really good example. I think if you want to make a really simple geometric mark that you can break down into little pieces, like, you're probably not going to do it in a unique way. It's been done a million times. There's a million things that look like your thing already.
But how is that? So here's maybe a perfect example. I'm just sitting here trying to rack my brain for an example that I think fits what I'm trying to describe. Square Cash is the first thing I can think of, right? Square Cash has no logo, as far as I know, right? Can you think of one?
You're saying Cash, not Square itself. You're just saying Square Cash, the sub-brand.
Square Cash, the product that allows you to send money directly from person to person.
Kind of cheating because there's a Square logo. It's like saying
The Square logo is nowhere on the Square Cash app, in the product, anywhere. And the product itself doesn't actually have an interface in a lot of ways. You can actually just use it through email. But like, to me, like, this product does not have a Square logo on it. It doesn't even have a Square name on it. I'm looking at my phone right now. It just says Cash, and it has a dollar sign as the icon on green, which fits my exact description of an icon, which you could make in under an hour that is totally respectable. The interface has no logo on it anywhere. And yet it's a thing that I do, something that requires the highest level of trust. I send money back and forth with friends with this app, and I trust it completely. Is it because of a logo?
But you picked a really, really unique concept. Like, Square Cash is incredibly unique because it barely even has an interface. The interface is just an email.
Well, I'm also talking about the app, too, which you open up and you type in an amount.
The app is completely pointless.
That's what I always use, though.
Really?
Yeah,
it's just the idea of Square Cash is you can do it by CCing an email. And I'm sure that's exactly what the app is doing. And the other thing to point out is that the thing, I just went to their website to remind myself, the thing is, like, yes, it's very simple, but it is a dollar sign within the Square logo, like it's the rounded corner logo. They have an incredibly simple logo. You can pull their rounded corner square out of their logo and get a different thing and put a square cat or put a dollar sign in the middle of it. But I promise you there was a little bit of thought put into that.
Oh, I think there was.
This feels like it's apples to oranges because Square Cash is a utility that's within a larger brand. Like, it's just a tool. It's not an actual standalone entity. It's just like one of the utilities that Square offers.
I mean, I understand that, but I think that's doesn't matter, right? Like, we're talking about, Matt, you just made the case that in order for something to be trustworthy, you need to have this thing you're describing, which you're saying is a logo. I'm pointing to a product that has no logo. The Square Cash thing, it's not in the Square logo. It's in like a rounded square, which you would certainly agree is something that Square can't own, right? That's not something that is ever going to be uniquely identifiably them, right?
They can't copyright it, but I'm sure they have a brand guidelines that say that's part of their brand guidelines.
See, I think that thing there is not because it's matching the square, rounded square shape, but because it's just the shape of icons on iOS and on Android, because that's the shape they were forced to make them.
Well, I think it's the origin. I would imagine that's the origin of the logo.
Either way. Yeah. Here's a thing that does a thing that I need to trust the most, and it has nothing to do at all with logo. There's no logo anywhere. And you could argue this dollar sign in a square, but I mean, that is like the definition of a logo you can never own, right? It's a dollar sign inside of a very fundamental shape.
Yeah.
If someone brought that into a GD1 branding class, they would be told that it's not unique, mm-hmm. it's not special, it's not ownable, all these things that you would normally say if you were critiquing a logo.
Yep.
And yet it's totally trustworthy because the interface is well built. It's reliable. It is snappy. It responds the way it's supposed to respond. Like, it does the job. All the things that you were saying a logo needs to do are done by the product itself.
I'm going
to
stick with that. You picked an example that it's like incredibly, incredibly rare where the product has almost no interface and their app is basically a fake interface that they don't need to have. Like, yes, in the situation where it's impossible to have an interface and it's impossible to, there's no actual use for a logo. Totally agree. It's a pointless thing.
Okay, so
to do.
All I'm saying is that's everything, and they're just the only ones that have realized it.
That's not everything, like, though. That's not everything.
I really think it is. And I will admit that I'm very hard pressed to find examples
via email. It's literally impossible to have a logo associated with the CC field. It's literally impossible.
I mean, so the email could respond to you with all the logos you want, confirming that, yes, this money's being sent, and yes, it's going to be really, really safely. Mm-hmm. And they could put logos in the app. Again, I use the app all the time because opening my email, it takes longer than opening the app and typing in a dollar amount and hitting send.
By the way, it does send you an email with a Square logo on it. Just going to point that out.
Yeah, but that's not how I ever interact with it. I never see that email. Like, that's not where the trustworthiness is coming from.
Okay. No, I get that. I'm just saying the example you're using is doing the thing that you're saying when they have an opportunity to.
Yeah, and I'm just saying that doesn't matter. Like, they're still doing it. I agree. But I'm saying that we're all still way behind, and pretty soon we're going to realize that doesn't matter at all.
I understand it doesn't matter to you, but do you not acknowledge that there is a little bit of subliminal messaging at play that, like, if it really came, there are things that look, like, do we agree that some things look trustworthy and some things don't look trustworthy?
Sure.
Sure. So the inner part, we're good on that part. Like, an interface can look trustworthy or not trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
My point is simply that, like, a logo just helps to do that job. It helps to do that job. I don't think it's the thing you should spend all your money on, or that it's impossible to do the job without it. But a logo sure helps to do that job sometimes.
I think putting your name on it helps to do the job, but I don't think it has to be a logo. It's just your name.
The name Square is probably the most important part of this entire thing, right? The fact mm-hmm. that it's Square and you trust Square for all kinds of other things. But I don't even really like using the term logo necessarily, because what I'm saying is that, yeah, I agree. There's a lot of things being taught about logos right now that don't really apply anymore, and it doesn't really matter. But the idea of some sort of visual that you can use to tie all your stuff together, if we're going to call that a logo, we call it a mark, call it a word mark, and you just picked a font and you set your thing. I'm qualifying those all as doing the same job, and I still think that can do an effective job. Square is a generic word. Before Square had nearly as much cachet as it does now, if you saw it set in the same way over and over again, as opposed to just hearing the word, I think that would help build the idea of square.
I think we're saying similar things, right?
Oh, like, for sure. We're definitely saying similar things. I think my biggest point is that you're kind of splitting hairs and you're saying like, well, all of these other elements do the job. Interfaces do the job. Fonts do the job. Colors do the job. Names do the job. But when it gets to logos, which is vaguely defined, that doesn't do the job anymore. And it's totally pointless. It's like, well, if you're conceding that all the other things do the job, why not just have one more thing that helps it? And we just learn better ways to do it. And we evolve over time to do a better job.
All right. Maybe here's a better distinction then, Matt. In the 20th century, companies would go to hire a branding agency to not just create them a logo, right?
Yep.
We all know that you don't pay all that money to get just a little mark. You pay that money to get a system, and the system is applied to lots of things that then go and get printed and get produced and then put out into the world. Maybe the key distinction here, Matt, is that no longer is there anything that your company is not producing internally. Like, you are making your product. You're making your product every day is going to make it trustworthy. If you're consistent, it's going to be consistent. There is no need for any of the things that we traditionally associate with a logo or branding to come into play, as long as you just are consistent and trustworthy and reliable with the work you're doing every day building your product. And there are no other pieces. You build your product every day. You be consistent. Yes, don't make two things different colors, because that just plain doesn't make sense. You don't need a graphic design degree to understand that, you know, these two things that do the same thing shouldn't be totally different colors. But that action is just a thing that every company needs to do now, and needs to be felt all across all different levels of the hierarchy and all different positions in the company. And no longer is it a thing that is just done and you produce all of the assets and then you print them across all these different things, and then you've successfully created a system. Because if you do that, if you come in from the outside and you make a beautiful logo and then you hand it off to some team that's going to go make an interface that's whatever, or they're going to go implement it in ways that are not consistent, mm-hmm. you did nothing. Your logo is completely useless. So I'm saying the important part of that whole equation is just that the thing being built be consistent. Absolutely. 100%. I'm saying you need to know nothing about graphic design, about branding, or any of that to accomplish that job anymore. And it used to be that you couldn't do that, right? Because the job of being consistent in the 20th century meant that your trucks and your invoices and your advertisements and your packaging all had to be consistent. And you can't do all of that. You can't be consistent in that way. But now you're doing one thing. You're making a product, a app, a website. And it's able to be accessed by millions of people, and they're all looking at the exact same version of the thing. It doesn't break apart into pieces. It doesn't, you know, become this thing that has these million, you know, little arms that are out of your control. Everyone's going to the one version of the thing, and you better have made it consistent.
Well, I think you're simplifying companies down too much. Like, it sounds as if you're talking about only small product teams, which is a great thing, but that's not the
Facebook,
world.
Google, yeah, Facebook, Twitter, these companies are just like this thing I'm describing.
Yeah. Except that here's what you're doing is you're taking the complexity of the physical world and you're just saying, well, now because digital, that doesn't exist anymore. It does exist. Digital products can be very, very complex. And there could be many different things you need to tie together, even if everybody's going to the same website. Everybody's going to Facebook.com. Everybody's pointing to the same place. But that doesn't mean Facebook.com is the one page. There's many, many different things that Facebook does that they need to tie together. Very useful. They have the mark to tie those things together.
See, that's that last part I don't agree with. Like, yeah, it's a hard job to run a big product and to have lots of different teams working on different pieces and have them all understand the same vision, all be working to the same style guide or working to the same values and parameters set forth and how things should be structured.
Yep.
But none of that has to do with a logo.
Okay, here's a question. Let's take all the different pages that exist across Facebook and let's have that Facebook mark on there on the top left. And now let's do a version where it's not on there. Are they going to do wildly different things? No, they're not. They're still Facebook. But is it better to remove it or better to have it?
I mean, I'm not saying... I'm saying that thing in the top corner does not need to be a logo. It does not need to have been carefully crafted Bezier by a team of designers that put 100 of them up on a wall and decided what the best one was.
So what is it? Is it that you do a bad job or you just do... like you just type in the word Facebook in Arial, and because of all the time you saved, it's better.
I think
it's a fair question. I think it might be frustrating. But
no,
I think
it is.
It's a very
I'm
fair
trying
question.
To find the trying to find the right way to word what I'm trying to express.
Okay.
Like, yes, you could spend the time to do a great job of it, Matt, for sure. I'm just saying that is a luxury. That's a thing that like yes, you could also spend the time to tile all of your bathrooms in your office building gold. Is that better than not gold tile bathrooms? Sure, it's great. Gold tile bathrooms are super. But the way that designers talk about branding is if it's this
100% essential thing. I'm not going to let you get away with that analogy because...
Why not?
One serves almost no purpose and actually might be even a worse bathroom. Why don't you use an example where one would actually be a better bathroom by spending less money on it? That would be a better analogy.
But I'm saying I don't think... You're saying that you don't think my metaphor is valid because you just don't agree with me. That's what I'm saying. That is what I intend to express. Mm-hmm. Like putting a whole team on designing the logo for Google or Uber or Facebook for a number of weeks is just a great luxury that you have if you're a giant company. Like, sure, we can spend a lot of time really decorating and really, you know, paying a lot of attention to this little piece of the world, which you can also do. You can also spend hours upon hours upon hours perfecting the exact lighting arrangement in an office building, yep. Right? Yeah, you could spend $400,000 doing that, sure. I'm just saying that it's a thing that so many designers think is essential, and so many designers are quick to ridicule somebody that doesn't value it,
yeah.
And it just does not matter in the way that it used to. And honestly, like, I don't know if it ever mattered to the degree that some designers think it did, but I do think it was much more important when there was a greater diversity of ways to experience a thing than there is now with the communication age and with the fact that you just go to the thing.
I still understand your point. It's just, in my mind, it's not an on-off switch. It's a scale at which there's an appropriate level for everybody. And do I think spending a year on a brand overhaul makes sense in all cases? It's probably a waste of time and money, right? It definitely is, and it definitely is a luxury, like the Uber thing. I mean, maybe it'll prove to be useful, who knows, but it seems a lot like a luxury. I totally agree. That doesn't mean the entire idea is stupid and dead just because someone spent a lot of extra money and made it seem frivolous.
What bums me out is when someone spends a bunch of time working on a logo like that, and then some designer is like, finally, someone valuing design, and then I just want to throw myself out a window.
Yeah, I also think that that sucks, and I think that most of what happens in, like, modern-day rebranding is a gigantic dick-swinging competition, and it sucks. And there's a lot of things that I hate about it. There's a lot that's just lying. There's a lot that is just, like, completely misrepresenting things that are real. But that doesn't mean the idea of a visual representing an idea in a consistent way I'm throwing out. Just because people are being assholes.
Yeah, that idea is just an interface now. It's just a product now. That's the thing. It's just so much simpler. We don't have to abstract anymore. We just make the thing good.
Very frustrating. Don't twist the thing I said into the thing you want it to be.
But I think you agree with me.
An interface isn't all, like, maybe we can just, I think we absolutely agree on a lot of this stuff, but you're making the word interface mean something that it doesn't mean when you're trying to say logo sometimes. Yes. I think both are very useful and great, and you can also be an asshole about an interface if you want to be.
How am I abusing the word interface?
Because I was describing a logo, and you tried to turn it into interface, which is not what I was saying.
No, but what part of what I'm describing is not an interface?
I think the idea, the concept of a logo, a very kind of simple visual...
I didn't ask you to describe a logo. I asked you to describe what is not an interface, but what we're talking about. You just said it's very important to have some visual that represents an idea. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is one of the best definitions of interface I've ever heard in my entire life.
Okay. All right, Andy. I get it.
Do you?
Yes, I do get it.
So what part of this is not an interface?
I think, but I'm just saying, like, just because you slide the scale down to the very basic definition, like, we could also say, this is just graphic design. Everything is just graphic design. Yes, absolutely. And also, what's the difference between art and design? And also, what is anything? Totally agree with that. But if we're going to use words for what they mean, we can say, we know the basic idea of what a logo is. We know the basic idea of what an interface is. Yes, we could just, you could use the graphic design definition to say that that's all of those things, but I still think a little symbol or a little word mark or something, a simple word mark, something like that, that is a thing you can use consistently, says the name of your thing, or just a symbol representing your thing, any sort of visual representing your thing, using consistently across your thing, it's probably a useful thing to have.
Very nostalgic, that's for sure.
God damn it! Oh, you're not going to give up. I understand. Look,
I mean, everything you are saying to me, like, I'm not trolling. I'm not trying to, like, over abstract what an interface is, but, like, the whole point of it is to visually represent whatever it's supposed to do so you know how to use it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, that is the whole thing. And then, sure, you get to click on it. That's great. But if it doesn't visually represent what it's supposed to do and what it means, then it's useless. It's just, you know, a bunch of weird graphic-y gibberish.
Yeah, we both agree about that part.
So, like, the Square Cash app, and again, forget the fact that it's an email service. I wish it wasn't for the purposes of this.
Yeah, should have used a good example this episode, too. That would have been great.
Well, I struggle to find good examples because you keep on just saying, well, look, there's a logo there. Yes, everyone's still putting logos on stuff. I agree with you completely. Yeah. My point is that no one has to.
No,
very, very few people have to anymore.
I know.
They're just doing it because they are comfortable with it.
Yep.
So the Square app, you look at the app and the interface itself tells you exactly what it does. It communicates exactly what this is for. It's 100% clear. It's unambiguous. You don't even need to speak the language to understand how his app is working. And it doesn't need a logo to visually represent an idea. It's just that is the idea. And there's no other way I'm ever going to interact with Square Cash. There it is. I go to it. When someone sends me cash, it pops up there in the same place. There's nothing else that needs to be branded. There's nothing that needs to be abstracted. It's just a thing and it makes sense.
I'm going to let you have the final word there because we'll just go in a circle. But I am going to read other people that disagree with you.
All right, this will be good. Okay. This will bolster your argument, probably.
Yay!
So, Andy, you remember last week we set up a website?
No, I don't remember. You did it. I wasn't part of that.
You gave me the domain name, which I really appreciate.
I did promise on air to give you the domain name, but
did.
I don't want to pretend like I didn't even know it was going to be on the website.
Oh, okay.
It turns out it's my face giant, I guess I should have assumed.
What did you think was going to happen? So, if you go to idisagreewithandy.man.gold, we set up a Squarespace landing page.
We're going to get a lot of hits this week, too, I think.
We set up a Squarespace landing page, and as per Andy's specifications, no logo, just a big old picture of his face, and there's a button that says, I disagree with Andy, and we allowed listeners to send in reasons that they disagree with Andy or things that they disagree with Andy about.
So there's no logo, but there's a picture of Andy's face, but is Andy's face not the logo?
Yeah, Andy's face is the logo. So if you click on the Why Do You Disagree button, there's a field that says, tell us why you disagree with Andy. And then I asked if we could read it on the show. And everybody checked yes, which is great. So I'm just going to read a couple of things that people disagree with you about. We're going to see how this goes. William, this is my favorite one.
Hi, William.
William says, clothes, accent walls, the existence of objective goodness beyond current cultural consciousness, and paint.
Just listed things he disagrees with.
Just listed things he disagreed with you about.
William sounds like he's right in your camp there, Matt. Sounds like you and William would get along real well.
Maybe we could be best friends. I don't know.
Hey, do you want a best friend to get along with all the time and agree with everything about? That doesn't sound fun.
Nah, I get along with you pretty well most of the time.
Yeah, but it's fun to disagree. It's how you grow as people.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, it's very fun to yell. I don't know if you've noticed. This whole episode has been great. I just got to yell at you the whole time. That's all I want.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm here for you. Thanks for your letter, William.
Josh, last name withheld. Probably totally foreign to you. Disagrees with Andy because he's objectively wrong about everything and his tastes are not trained. Thank you, Josh.
I think that's my coworker.
Wait, what? Who? Probably
Jesus
somebody Andy
Christ.
Doesn't know at all.
I think that's probably the man I work with every day. It's got a common name, so, you know, it's going to be
not
hard to
tell you who that is. Yeah, it could be any Josh.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, Josh, I do not thank you for that letter.
Yeah, because he's objectively wrong and his tastes are not trained. That's what Josh says. Just to hammer that point home. So here, this is from Santiago. They said their Twitter name, too. Should I give their Twitter name?
I know who you're talking about already. This guy tweets a lot. Good tweeter.
Okay. Sans Design on Twitter.
Oh, wait, no. Different guy.
Well, I really enjoyed the talk. I questioned many things I thought I already knew hearing Andy's opinion, but I disagree because he's too extreme. Branding is important. I don't do branding, but as a UI UX designer, I consider identity a very important aspect of the project, product, website, whatever. For me, the logo sums up everything. Probably not the most important aspect of a new company with a low budget, I agree, but if you can, get a good one. I'm co-founding two products. In one, we felt the sense of community and belonging was important, so we decided to establish a strong brand that represented us and the idea, the only money investment we made until now. For the other one, we set our priorities elsewhere, and branding grotesque with some letter spacing works just fine for now. Anyway, cool stuff, guys. It's always refreshing to hear different opinions and think about stuff harder. Although I mainly disagree with Andy, I think this is a very arbitrary topic, and a lot of circumstances play a role in the final decision on whether or not to get a logo. Thank you, Santiago, for agreeing with me about everything.
That was very measured and thoughtful of you.
Yep. Here we go. This is from Callum.
That's Callum Hopkins, right? That better be.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, good.
Okay.
That's another Twitter person I feel like I know.
Web companies are the new 90s, 2000s rock bands, and a brand's logo is the new rock t-shirt. Logos are our stripes in the web jungle. We associate ourselves with those with the same stripes as us. The Apple fanboys, Microsoft evangelists, the Twitter legion, and Facebook faithful. Logos are the banners we align ourselves with. Andy pointed out logos don't have the same logical need anymore, but whoever said allegiances need to be logical? Who said that, Andy? Actually, that was one thing I didn't say earlier, but I think there also is still value to the fact that if the culture decides that logos are trustworthy, maybe take advantage of that? What's so bad about taking advantage of what already exists in our culture?
The answer is it's only bad to take advantage of if you're a monster, and some people are. Yeah, those are great. Thank you for writing in. I feel like our audience is great and very thoughtful.
Not even get mad? You're not even going to defend
yourself? No, I'm not mad at all. I feel like everyone was very reasonable.
Oh, all of them were women, Andy.
That would be great. Here's what I'm imagining. If I was a woman, these would be very different, I suspect. Mm-hmm. I suspect these would be very different tone and worded very, very differently.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah, I think so too. Let's end on that sober note.
Oh, sobering. So sobering.
Let's think about that while you're trying to fall asleep.
This has been On the Grid, episode 152. This week, I'm going to keep that website open. I disagree with andy.man.gold. If you disagree with them about this week, or even if you disagree with me, I'm going to let you use that form, even though the URL is wrong. Okay, you can use it for any sort of feedback about this episode. I disagree with andy.man.gold. Send us your thoughts. Also, just a note, if you ever hear a link or something referenced on the show, I'll always try to put it in the show notes. So that should appear in your podcast description, or you can go to our website, onthegrid.co. Thanks to Girlfriends for the theme music, and of course, thanks as always to you for listening. Until next week.
Podcast time.
Hi, podcast friends.
It's us, the podcast friends.
How was your week?
You should get a badge that says that or something.
That'll be very helpful.
I think people would respect that
badge.
Who's
to say we don't have a badge on right now?
It's true. Yeah, you can't tell if I'm wearing a badge, pants, anything. You can't really tell.
We're going to trick these suckers into thinking we're wearing badges.
Mm-hmm. And pants.
Oh, wait. Should we not call them suckers? That should not be revealed.
Turn in your badge and your mic. You're never going to cast again.
But boss, I'm just an out-of-control cop. What am I going to do? I need my gun.
You're out of control. We can't trust you. You're always on Wi-Fi, and sometimes you hit your mic and there's not a shock mount.
But how am I supposed to drive recklessly through the town without my badge and my gun?
It's too much collateral damage. We're going to need you to go ahead and just not record everything you say.
But that's what I do. I just shoot randomly, and then people applaud my effort.
I don't get the joke here. I'm trying to guess and you, but I don't understand. Like, you're describing some sort of superhero that just, like, shoots into a crowd?
No, I'm a rogue cop who doesn't play by the rules, and he gets his badge suspended every episode or every movie.
Yep.
And his gun gets taken away.
Mm-hmm. In this case, your gun is your podcasting equipment.
And I'm very worried about this because how am I supposed to be so irresponsible without a gun?
Yeah, exactly. It really does help. It really amplifies the irresponsibility. I see what you're saying. You know, you pull out a nightstick in public, everyone's like, meh, okay, that guy's a little bit reckless. But, you know, a gun just really turns up to 11.
It really does.
You know, if you're going to be reckless, I always say, just do it right. You know, don't half-ass recklessness.
That's not what I say.
That's not what you say?
If you're going to do it, if you're going to be reckless, go ahead and half-ass that one. That one will be fine. Actually, anything, really, if you're going to commit a crime, go ahead and half-ass it. That seems fine to me.
Oh, that just seems reckless.
Do a bad job committing a crime.
But does that mean that, like, you...
It's a safety message from On the Grid.
Does that mean you commit less of a crime, or that you commit the crime in a way that it's more easy to capture you afterwards?
It's you do a bad job at it. So let's say you're stealing a car. You don't actually break into the car.
Oh, yeah. So you're stealing a car, and you go to a car dealership, and you give them money for a down payment, and you sign up for a car payment. And you're shit.
God
I fucked
damn
up,
it.
Fucked
they
up
got me again. I was so close to stealing it, and then I gave them money, and then it was just... transaction for goods and or services.
You go into a bank with a ski mask on, you come out with a deposit slip, and you're like, oh, happened again. Oh,
it's
amateur hour.
Yeah, it's real life, man. It happens sometimes. I try to rob everything constantly, and I just accidentally live by the law.
It's a weird picture we're painting.